This is GM Authority Debate, episode 13, recorded July 9th, 2010. GM Crossovers. The GM Authority Debate is brought to you by the GM Authority News Desk. For the latest independent General Motors news, analysis, and a whole lot more, visit gmauthority.com. You can subscribe to this podcast for free. Try searching for GM Authority Debate in the iTunes Store. Welcome to GM Authority Debate. This is, of course, the show where, well, we argue and we debate and we disagree about the most important General Motors topics. And, of course, we can never forget our other tagline, which is the fact that this is the show. This is that General Motors show that even the devil can't argue with. Right?
Right.
Yes. I'm your host, Alex Sloft, and the other voice you hear is Manoli Katakis from the Twilight of the Renaissance Center.
The Twilight? When you say Twilight, it makes me, you know, it sounds like that stupid vampire movie.
Oh, you're not a vampire. I forgot. Sorry. from the shadows of the Renaissance Center.
That also is very vampire-ish.
Okay. Well, next time I'll have to thesaurus another word out of the dictionary. Hey, I put on shadow, and twilight is what came up, so...
You could say in the shade of the Rensen, because it's hot as hell up here.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it? Do you think it's hotter than it is down here in mighty South Florida?
Broke triple digits yesterday and the day before.
Wow. Yeah, well, it's not quite as hot here. Yeah. That's because we have the ocean breeze where I am.
Yeah, you and the smelly old people in Boca Raton.
Yeah, but I'm not really in Boca. I'm kind of a little bit more of the... north, so
yeah, but like the draft, like it blows through like they're cold, empty, like houses, and like they're just their bitterness. And
well, you know what they call the Chevy of Boca Raton, right?
Rolls Royce,
the Lexus ES, ES series. Today, I guess it's the ES350.
See, there's just something about that I just don't like.
No,
about that little whole statement there.
What should it be? Should it be the Buick LaCrosse?
Should say the, I don't know. Just Chevy.
What should be...
I don't even think Chevys are common down in Florida. The Lexus is the Toyota.
Yeah, it is. It's the Lexus and Toyota. That's the, those are the top selling. It's followed by BMW very closely down here in South Florida, but it's, in luxury, it's Lexus, BMW, and Mercedes, and Audi is fourth. And then there is Toyota, Honda, Nissan, and then Chevy.
You know what that tells me about all the people in Florida, or the majority of buyers?
Don't tell me.
They have no, like, charisma when it comes to cars.
They also have no taste, yeah.
Yes, they buy, you know, utilities. Appliances. Yep. It's like, you know, when you go out and buy a fridge, or when you go out and, you know, you get a toaster. That's pretty much how they view their cars.
Washer, dryer.
Yes.
Yep.
I mean, vacuum. I don't mean to offend anyone who's really, really passionate about their kitchen appliances, but come on. Cars are different.
Yeah, they are. And there are those kitchen appliances, by the way, that do exude some kind of passion from, you know, that stainless steel stuff.
The magic bullet.
Yeah, all that. I mean, there is that stuff, but we're talking about, of course, you know, your general run of the mill utilities. And I'm sorry, but the Toyota Camry and the Nissan Altima, those are utilities. So I'm not going to argue there with anybody. But if you do want to argue with us, you can write into us. You can do so to info@gmauthority.com, and you can let us know whether you agree with us or not. Now, before we get started on today's topic,
yes.
Before we go on, I want to ask everyone who is listening a favor, and that is to help us out and get this show more popular. And the way you can do that, dear listener, is to, if you're using Twitter, if you're using Facebook, if you, whatever social network you're on, it's just help us out and tell everyone, tell all your followers, tell all your friends, tell all of your whatever, you know, kind of relationship you have on your social network with all your people. Let them know that you're listening to the GM Authority Debate podcast, and that they can find it at debate.gmauthority.com, and let them know that you really like the show. Hopefully you're listening to this and hopefully you really like it. So Hopefully you can do that for us and help us out. We do the show for free. We don't charge you a penny for it. And we really like doing it, but you know, it also has to be worth our while. So if you can help us out, please do, and we'd really, really, really appreciate it. Won't we?
I will.
I will too. So, without any further ado, let's get into the topic of today's lively and debateful show.
Sure to be lively.
It will be lively because we're going to not agree to disagree on this. We're going to disagree the whole time. I have a feeling. I don't know what's going to happen yet, but I have a feeling that's going to be the case.
I believe so.
So, of course, our topic for today, as we announced on Twitter, is GM's CUVs, of course, the crossover utility vehicles, also known as crossovers, also known as BMW likes to call them SAVs, or short for sports or sport activity vehicles. But we're going to talk about the basic crossover lineup within GM, and specifically Chevy, Cadillac, and GMC crossovers. Buick, you know, only has one right now. It doesn't really count. But we're going to focus our attention on those. And the thing that really sparked this this topic within the GM Authority, within the corridors of the GM Authority headquarters, is that, you know, there seems to be a constant theme. I don't know if we'd call it you'd call it a theme, Anoli, but it seems to be a repeating theme. Yeah, that's what it is. Mm-hmm. And that is that GM constantly, especially with their newest CUVs like the Equinox and the Traverse, they have a thing about making their CUVs bigger in size, longer in size than the competition. And I personally have an issue with that. I personally think that it's unnecessary and that it's a very, very uncompetitive move by them to do so. So, and specifically, let's first talk about the Equinox and the Traverse, okay?
Okay.
So the Equinox is, of course, all new for the 2010 model year, right?
Yes.
And that was actually our first vehicle in GM Authority Garage, and you know, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I really liked the car. I really like everything about it. There were a couple of things that were unrefined, but you know, this is a compact. Supposedly, this is a compact CUV, right? I mean, is that how Chevrolet is marketing this car?
I would market it as an affordable, best-in-class CUV.
Right. Okay. But you have to categorize it based on size as well.
Well, when you say you're going to categorize something, what are you going to look at? Are you going to look at the way that the EPA does it? Are you going to look at the way Edmunds does it? Cars.com does it? Or are you going to look at the way GM does it? Because GM
and
themselves, they classify through their own, you know, ways. It's like they don't bother to look at how anyone else classifies their cars. It's just the way, like, you know, how GM will classify theirs. And if they say that, you know, it's their small CUV segment is going between, you know, like, you know, say 160 to 180 inches or so. Mm-hmm. That's what they're gonna stake their claim at. And what's the Equinox?
88.
You know, they'll throw that in there. They'll be like, all right, this is gonna be our cutoff. This is gonna be the Equinox is gonna be our cutoff for the small CUV market. Mm-hmm. And then they're gonna market it like that. And they're gonna say, well, you know, according to our segment, according to our class, you know, it's bigger than the RAV, you know, it's going to have more room than the RAV4, the Ford Escape, you know, the Murano, those sorts of things.
How about the Nissan Rogue?
Nissan Rogue, isn't that even smaller?
Yeah.
We'll talk about that in a little bit, but let's just get this Equinox okay.
The thing that I want to I kind of want to respond to you, I guess, within this is that GM may have its own classification. And by the way, we cannot use the EPA classification because those guys are, and those guys and gals over there, I don't know what kind of stuff they're on or what they're smoking or what's going on over there. But to classify, I mean, they classified, just for the sake of comparison, they classified the new Audi A8
yes.
as a midsize vehicle. Okay. So we can't really base... they also not only the new one, but they also categorized the old one as a mid-size vehicle. They also categorized, I believe, the Lexus LS as a mid-size vehicle based on their classification. So we can't use them. They're not a reliable source of classification.
You know who else you can't use?
Who?
You can't use the guys that did the North American National Auto Show Car and Truck of the Year. Because, they make the Ford Transit Connect Truck of the Year.
What are you talking about? It's a truck, right?
Yeah, it's a truck. Yeah, it's a front-wheel drive panel van.
You know, based on the Focus platform.
Yeah, based on the Ford Focus. Okay, well, why don't we just, next time we're there, why don't we just make the HHR Truck of the Year?
That's a truck. You know,
same size.
It's a panel.
You can get a panel version. Shoot, why not? You know?
The HHR is a fine, fine vehicle, by the way.
You know, and I honestly feel like the HHR panel is, really underrated. I feel like, Ford Transit Connect's like, oh, look at us. Look at our Ford Transit Connect. It's like, woohoo. And it's just like, okay, yeah, Chevy's had the HHR panel for...
Yeah, but the Connect has sliding doors, and it's got all those goody, possible really cool configurations on the inside that you can arrange all your cubbies and tools and, whatever you else... You can put a freaking table in there as one of the configuration options. You can put a table in there with a computer and a chair, and you can have, like, a live... production studio. Like, it's perfect for newscasters, and it's gonna be perfect for someone like us, for like GM Authority. I'm looking at the Transit Connect a few years down the road right now, and getting us a mobile production environment.
Minor details,
but anyway, yeah, that when have details ever prevented anybody from doing anything major?
Yes. Oh, and you know another thing about that group? They don't throw in heavy duty trucks in the mix. Never have.
The NIAS?
Yeah, they have never looked at, other heavy duty pickup trucks, like the Sierra 2500 or the all new back then it was all new, not now it's all the new heavy duty trucks are new, but right. The Ram 2500, they didn't even consider that one, and it was brand spanking new. Mm-hmm. One motor trend over.
I don't know. We can't use the EPA. We can't use the NIAS ratings. Here's what we can use, though. I think the wise thing to do when we're talking about classification is to look at the competition. And traditionally, you have the C class, right? The C segment, and then you have everything that's above it. Sometimes, of course, you have the A and the B segments, but in the United States, that's not very popular, if at all. So I think that we should use, for the sake of this discussion, we can use what the competition has to offer. And, specifically, if we're talking about the Equinox, and so the Equinox in all the ads and in all the comparos, and even if you go on the Chevrolet website right now, today, actually, let me pull it up while I'm talking. But even if you go there, they compare the Equinox to the RAV4 and the Honda CR-V.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
These are kind of their two major competitors, and the other one is the Ford Escape. Now, what's interesting is that the Equinox is longer, wider, bigger, and heavier than any of those three vehicles, than the RAV4, than the Escape, than the CR-V.
Yes. But look at the fuel economy.
Okay.
Look at the price.
Okay, so let's go down those one by one. Is there anything else I need to look at?
Demographics, if you can find those.
Yeah, I can't find those. Not right now. But what they didn't send it still sometime. Okay, so fuel economy, right?
Yes. With the four-cylinder engine option, and then you can go up to
Want a four-cylinder in an Equinox, man. I that's the tester that we had with the 2.4 with the 2.4 Ecotec.
Yep.
And some people like it. So I don't know who in their right mind would really, really, really like that car with the four-cylinder.
Look, I'll agree with you. It's underpowered.
No, it's not just underpowered. It's not just underpowered.
Not just.
It makes the entire car feel like you're in one of those wooden roller coasters, all right? It shakes. It makes all kinds of weird noises. The NVH levels are out of this world. with a four-cylinder. I mean, you floor that thing, and it's like, okay, well, not only will it take it 2 seconds to kick in, but once it does kick in, and it doesn't, you know, doesn't throw you back into your seat, it doesn't even give you whiplash or any kind of hint of whiplash when you floor that thing, you also face the possibility of, you know, what feels like exploding the entire Equinox. That's how bad that engine is.
Just the noise.
Not. It's not the fact that it's the engine. I just feel it's the wrong engine for the wrong car.
Well, where else are you going to get 32 mpg on a 188-inch vehicle?
Well, here's the thing.
That isn't a sedan.
Right. Here's my concern with that. And addressing that statement, you know, wouldn't it have been easier for GM, for Chevrolet, to achieve that kind of fuel economy, maybe even greater fuel economy, if that vehicle were smaller, meaning shorter and packed less weight?
Yes.
It would have been easier, right? Maybe even right now I think the Equinox on a highway tops out at 32 using the Eco mode. So if they would have chopped, let's say 4, 5, 6 inches off of the Equinox, they would have been able to achieve something like 34, maybe 35 mpgs on the highway. You know,
maybe 7 inches.
Maybe seven, you know, whatever. Just look, the RAV4 is about 180 inches long. The CRV is about 180 inches long. The Escape is a lot shorter. It's about 174. Here's the thing, though, is that the Equinox is bigger than... Let's just look at the Japanese competition, because those seem to be the segment leaders today.
Okay.
And Equinox, let's just be fair, the Equinox is doing very well as well. You know, the Equinox...
Very, very well. I mean, you got to think, like, if it wasn't for the Equinox and, you know, we'll note the GMC Terrain as well, because they're brother-sister cars... GM is absolutely dominating the CUV market right now, and it's because of the Equinox, the Terrain, the Acadia, and the Traverse. It's because they offer really great product. Now, according to classifications, maybe they don't stack up properly in terms of size, but maybe it's all in one package. Maybe it has that, like, you know, the right amount of cabin space in the rear, you know, in the trunk. Maybe it has the right amount, you know, it's the price, it's the fuel economy, it's just it's all the everything rolled into one. Maybe it's just that's what's really helping GM hit the mark in the segment right now. And it might not just be based on size. Maybe the size thing is just not as important as we think it is.
Well, here's what I was going to say, is that even though the Equinox is bigger.
Yeah.
A lot bigger. It's about 8 inches longer than the RAV4 and the CRV. It still has less interior room and less luggage capacity and less cargo space than do the other four, the other two.
What?
Yep. Absolutely. What? That's the thing, is that it has a lot of space from its greenhouse. And it takes up a lot of space from a footprint perspective, but it seems to be less space efficient. It makes less efficient use of the space that it has at its disposal. And I looked this up, so you can quote me on that. But that's the way it is, and that surprised me as well. You know, why is this the case?
Uh-huh.
And I don't know. I really don't know. I think that. Chevy or GM, you know, whichever you want to say, is not using the space in there as well as they could be.
It's like the Chevy Impala.
Yeah, well, the Impala, you know, we can give that a pass because that thing is on a 20-year-old chassis. You know, back when cars didn't really need to be all that efficient and space efficient and didn't have to, you know, abide by all these interesting qualities that we judge cars by today. So the Impala, we can give them a break. This one, you know, the Equinox, I can't give it a break because it's brand new. It's huge. It's longer, and it seats less. Now, here's another thing. Let's keep going down the list. So, I mean, that takes care of the fuel economy, right? I mean, if they could have chopped a couple of inches off the Equinox, they would have achieved even more, even better fuel economy. So that's one. Now, the other thing is, and by the way, if they would have chopped off a couple of inches off the Knox or off the Terrain, they would have not only been able to do that and achieve greater fuel economy, but they would have also been able to use that space that they were working with, they would have been forced to use that space that they were working with in a more efficient way. Because now you don't have, you know, 3, 4, 5, those 6 or 8 inches that you have in the competition in the trunk. So now you have to go find that space somewhere else. So that's one thing. Now, let's keep going down the list. And the other thing I think you mentioned was price, right?
Right.
Now, I think this is a pretty well understood and a pretty tried fact, but it doesn't cost any automaker more money, you know, from a manufacturing perspective, to make a car that's bigger. It doesn't cost them any more to make a compact sedan than it does to make a midsize sedan. You know, since the argument could be made that since the midsize sedan uses more material because it's longer and bigger, it would cost more. But in reality, that's not the case. I mean, we're talking about dollars here, like literally like $20 to $80 difference. From a compact to a midsize sedan from a material use perspective. So it doesn't cost them anything. It cost GM any more to make a compact versus a midsize versus a large car. But on a pricing perspective, though, yeah, the Equinox does or is priced competitively, and it is priced to compete very well with the RAV4, with the CR-V, with the Escape and the, you know, Murano from Nissan. So in that regard, sure, that's fine. My proposition, and this has been for quite a while, is that, and I've been talking about this, I've talked about this on other shows on the GM Authority Network before, I would like to see, personally, a smaller sub-Equinox CUV onto the Chevy nameplate, the Chevy badge. It would slide underneath the Equinox, and it would, you know, that way you can actually price it even lower, or maybe you can give it the same price as the Equinox and then let the Equinox go up market. Here's a perfect example of what I'm talking about, by the way. The new Kia Sportage, have you seen that?
Is it the Sportage or the Sorento?
They're both new.
Yeah, but which one's smaller?
The Sportage is the smallest one.
Okay.
So the Kia Sportage, also that shares the Hyundai Tucson platform. So those two vehicles, those are truly compact CUVs. I believe they're something like 174 inches long. Okay, so somewhere around that vicinity. And if you look at the Sportage, you can just pull up the pictures there while I'm talking. The new one, it really, really, really looks great. I believe Autoblog did a first drive a couple of weeks ago. And they really, really liked it. They said it was a really sporty, affordable CUV.
It looks good too.
It looks awesome. I mean, that car, you know, we sing the Equinox's praise here, day in and day out, within the GM Authority corridors here. But you know, the Sport is just, I mean, that if I were in the market for that vehicle, that's what I would buy. It looks great. But that's beside the point. My point is that I believe there's space underneath the Equinox, and that's the space that's occupied by such vehicles as the Sportage. It's occupied by such vehicles as the Ford Escape. There's the Nissan Murano, okay? And to a certain extent, the RAV4. So that's, you know, I think that Chevy and GM would do well with a smaller sub-Equinox vehicle. And to that effect, what I would do is I would also fit in a third row into the Equinox as well. There is space there for a third row. It may not be comfortable. It may not be able to seat, you know, Shaquille O'Neal back there, which I don't know who says his first name anymore. I should have just said Shaq.
Shaq.
But, I guess I've been reading Wikipedia too long, where they refer to him by his full name like 20 times. But that's the thing, is that the RAV4, the new Kia Sorento, you know, this is the Sportage, the big brother to the Sportage, both of those have a third row, and both of those are, you know, compact/midsize CUVs. Why doesn't Equinox have it? Why do I, as a customer who is looking for, let's say I have a family with 3 kids, right?
Right.
If I were looking at a Chevy product, you know, I would be looking at the Equinox, And I'd be willing to spend around, the Equinox, it starts at around 22,000, right? So I'd be looking to spend around $22,000 for an Equinox. But I wouldn't be able to get the Equinox because, well, it doesn't have a third row available. So that's automatically out of the question for me. Whereas if I look at the RAV4, if I look at the Kia Sorento, all automatically both those have a third row as an option, and those are in the same price range as an Equinox. So guess what? The Equinox is off my list, and the other two are automatically on it. You know, the other option I can do is I can go look at the Chevy Traverse, of course, but that's considerably more expensive. That's $29,000, right?
Right.
So if I wanted to go and I wanted to look at GM and Chevrolet in particular, basically there's nothing for me if I have a, big family. I can't get anything for low 20s. I would have to go and buy the Traverse. Whereas, the CRV, the Sorento, they provide me with options.
At the moment, Alex, it's GM is really just having to work with what they got. Mm-hmm. Like, as you could think, they came out with, how many like small SUVs could you sell at one given time or within like so many like given years? If they were to really, put all the resources, like say they were going to throw all the resources into the CUV market and have both, like an Equinox, like an upmarket one with third rows and more efficient cargo space, et cetera, and then a smaller one, only two rows.
You know what that smaller one's called?
What would it be called?
The Saturn View.
Yes.
Theta platform, shorter platform, shorter car. It goes, that one goes head to head with the RAV4 and the CRV and the Sportage. All right.
Back in the 80s, that's what Saturn was built for. It was built to be like an upmarket version of Chevy and go up against the Japanese import brands, and they wanted Chevy to be a really like a basic brand, kind of like the way it is in India right now and in Europe, and like minus the cruise, of course, and those developing countries. That's what Chevy was here, so many years ago, and that goes back to like their ladder scheme. But the minute Rick Wagner, how many CEOs was that again? Even though it was only like two years ago.
So we had Fritz after that, and then we had Mr. Whitaker.
Yes. Anyway,
two CEOs ago. Yeah.
Wagner, he wanted the current generation Malibu to be a direct head-to-head Camry competitor. That's what he said. That's what he wanted. And everyone's like, no, that's Saturn's job. It's Saturn's job. It's like, no, this is going to be what Chevrolet is going to do now. And pretty much the minute that, Chevrolet began to make the transition to be more upmarket and to compete more with, like, the Japanese mainstream brands, I pretty much was, it was like it put Saturn in a really bad place.
Right. I actually agree because I see where you're coming from as well because, when you're developing a product line, and it appears to me that this is what happened. It appears to me that the Equinox kind of, you have the GM when they were developing the new Equinox, mm-hmm. they were looking at the entire picture. I mean, they were developing this car for, I think, since late 2008. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that was the date when the project first started to appear, and engineers were really put to work on that. Late 2008, early 2009. And of course, it came out as in 2010. That was the first year of the Equinox in the market. But I think the goal that was set forth by the product team,
yes,
was that okay, here's how we're going to position the Equinox. It's going to be bigger than the View.
Yep.
While it's going to be on the same platform, the Theta yep. platform. So we're going to have the View at the lower market, kind of that to go against the RAV4 and so forth. And the Sportage and the what else is there? The CRV.
Mm-hmm.
While the Equinox is going to be upmarket.
Yes, yes, and then the bleep hit the fan and then
Saturn was no more.
Yeah, Saturn's no more. You're left with only one small small/midsize.
It's really, CUV. I mean, it's really a midsize.
Yeah, it is. Like considering the proportions.
Right. I mean, the Highlander, the Toyota Highlander is 190 inches long. The Equinox is 188. The Honda Pilot is 190. It's like, actually, the Pilot is 189, I believe. And, you know, the Equinox, again, is 188. So it is a midsize CUV from a dimensions standpoint. Unfortunately, it's not space efficient, so it doesn't fit as much as those two do.
Yeah, but you're, but that was when you say it's not space efficient, you're talking about, you know, marginal like inches to an inch and a half.
Well, I mean, from a length perspective, there's actually, I think,
length perspective, yes. Mm-hmm. But like, if you're talking like a, you know, headroom, you know, they're all 40 inches.
Well, where it's really apparent is in the trunk, especially yes. when you with the seats upright, with the second row upright, and with it yep. folded down. I think the RAV4 has 3 cubic feet more than the Equinox does, with the seats folded. And the Highlander, I think, has about 7 cubic feet more than the Equinox does with the seats folded as well. So even though they were very close in length proportionally, that's what I mean. But it was never meant to be, you know, to compete there. It was just that's the way it turned out. So yep. I think that the lineup that we've ended up today, you know, that we see today, while it's good, while it's very competitive, and while it's selling, it's still a lineup that was destined for the old GM, and I think it will take us one more generation of vehicles,
yes,
to really materialize and to really see the strategy play out of how GM is going to position their next generation CUVs. Whether they're going to split them up into two different models, have a 3-row Equinox, have a 2-row Equinox, have a maybe something else below the Equinox, I don't know.
Yep.
But I think that's still, we still have to see that. Because, like I said, there, you know, what we see today is, you know, it's the remnants of the old GM branded under the new GM name.
Yep. Come 2-3 years from now, you're going to see something completely different. The entire lineup's going to be completely switched over.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's the case. And you know, the thing that I hope they really start their look at, and there really are three main areas, main aspects, I should say. That an automaker or any company, but you know, since we're talking about cars, an automaker considers when they're developing a vehicle. You know, they have to look at their customers, they have to look at the competition, and they also have to look at the internal resources that they have. And those are the three key areas. And from there, you decide what kind of car you're going to build, who's going to be the target market. Mm-hmm. And you're going to look at all those things. So hopefully, GM will not only look at its customers and will not only look at its internal resources, but I hope they will look at the competition as well, and really look at it from a size perspective. You know, what's going on? What's the, you know, what are the leading vehicles in the class? How big are they? What do they do? How, you know, and you know, it's also one of those things where, you know, I let my fiance and a few other people drive the Equinox when we had it in the GM Authority garage.
Yes.
And my fiance, she drove, her mom has a Toyota, she has a RAV. And she says, wow, well, this is, she felt it. I mean, she drives the RAV a couple times a week and you know, drives the mom everywhere. And she felt, that was one of the first things she said is, you know, and she's, of course, absolutely not a car or a gearhead by any stretch of the imagination. And she said, wow, this feels a lot bigger than our RAV does. And you know, that's true. It's one of those things where, yeah, we discuss it here and we can talk about the length and the measurements and the inches, but in the real world, do people care about that? And there are people who they actually do want that compact feeling, that compact, you know, the maybe it's not even a nimble feeling where from a handling perspective, but it's one of those things where you don't want to be driving a huge vehicle. It's just something that you don't want to do. You want to drive something that's compact, something that you feel, you know, is proportionally comfortable to you when you're driving preferences.
Or you like a bigger car.
Or that.
If you're my mom, you know, you do. You like, for some reason or another, she likes, I'm not saying that, you know, she drives like, you know, a giant Suburban or anything. I mean, she's got a Buick Enclave, but she likes it because she, for the both like the cargo and transportation perspective of it, but she likes that, she, you know, it makes her feel safer because it's a bigger car.
Sure. And yep, absolutely. There should be a market for those vehicles as well. I mean, there should be a vehicle in the lineup of a mainstream automaker like Chevrolet, you know, as well. And I see what you're saying, because I actually, when we had the Traverse in the garage, yep. One of the first, actually, what was funny is that they dropped the Traverse off, and you know what they picked up is the Aveo. So it was a very big change going from an Aveo to the Traverse.
Yeah.
So, but as soon as I sat down there, I said, you know what? I don't care who gets in my way. They're going to be bumped right out. Like, we're playing bumper carts.
Yeah. That Traverse is, you know, if this is a transition, that was a very good one, because it's huge, especially even for like the market. It 202 inches. You're looking at
205 inches for the Traverse.
You're looking at something that's longer than the Tahoe.
By 3 inches.
Yes. Oh, okay. Tahoe's 202 inches. Right. But at the same time, you would think that they would, you know, undermine one another, but they really don't.
Yep.
It's just sometimes it's just like the way the market plays out. Mm-hmm. The, you know, people that stick with the big SUVs like Ford Expeditions, Chevy Tahoes, Chevy Suburbans, you know, and then the GMC respective Yukon models. They don't really, you know, go down to like the car based front wheel drive, based you know, really purpose built, you know, with one thing in mind, which was, you know, how many people can you put, and how economical can you get this car?
Right.
And that's what the Lambda platform really seemed to be all about. Is they do two things really well. And it's fuel economy, and it's capacity. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, the Tahoe and the Suburban, they're much more multi-role. I mean, they can still do, you know, they can still carry 8 people, not as, you know, nicely.
Right, as
a Traverse.
Traverse, yeah.
And but they can tow. They have the V8s, they're rear-wheel drive, a lot more utility to those things.
And they're also a couch on wheels.
Lovely couch.
Well, that's if you like the hard plastics.
But again, you know, we'll see, come the next generation of vehicles, we'll see, you know, all new full-size SUVs. They're not going to go away. People like them, people need them, and, you know, same thing with these.
I don't know if they need them. I know they like them. I don't know if they really, really need them.
If you're in a rural area, get a truck. Okay, yeah, but you say you're Catholic, so you have 8 kids.
Stick them in the barn that you're towing behind you anyway.
Yeah, right. You know, there will always be a market for full size SUVs. It's just it's not going to be as big as it ever was anymore. And, you know, that they're going to definitely flex the production output because of that. And you're going to see, you know, a lot more, you know, smaller SUVs or CUVs, car-based models coming out than, you know, the big SUVs. But anyway, you know, everyone knows this, so I don't even know why I'm talking about
right.
it.
Right, and the thing is that, I mean, we're already seeing the transition from these huge SUVs and body-on-frame SUVs to the car-based crossovers, because from everything that we've been hearing so far, the next generation Escalade, not the ESV model, but the regular Escalade, may be a Lambda-based.
No, it's not.
Well, we don't. Do we know for sure?
Yeah, it's not going to be. Like, I know for sure.
Okay.
That it is not going to be. It's not going to be called an Escalade.
Okay.
They might call it something else, and who knows? You know, it's still early. And its development, they might shelve it altogether, but it will not be called an Escalade. This I know. You know, I like from my sources, guys that worked like internally with the Cadillac programs for years, guys that have worked with, you know, with both the full size and Lambda based, you know, models that, you know, when they're very involved with these programs. These guys are all telling me that there's no way that they would ever call this thing an Escalade.
So you have it on record.
Yes. I mean, just because of the fact, you got to think here, mm-hmm. Where did the Escalade get its name? Where does it like really sell? When you think Escalade, do you think, you know, like Lambda-based front-wheel drive soccer mom car? No. You know, you're thinking like this big boy swagger vehicle with 22-inch rims, throaty, you know, Vortec.
Oh, please, the 22s.
And tons and tons of chrome.
Well, you can fit chrome, and you can fit 22s in a Lambda-based car.
Yes, but you're not going to fit that V8.
Why can't you put a V8 in there?
You're not going to fit a 6.2 V8 in there.
Well, maybe not, but all the engines are coming down in size and displacement, you know, for mainstream vehicles. Maybe you will be able to fit a smaller pushrod in there now that GM has shelved the North Star replacement.
Yes, but look, I would love, you know, I think that there's room in the lineup for a large crossover in Cadillac, but not a Lambda-based one.
Really?
Like,
we talked about this, I remember.
Yes, we did. We talked about this thing. There's one thing that really justifies it, and it's the fact that people buy, you know, they don't necessarily look at models, you know, one for one model. You know, it's not like in sports where you look at LeBron James and what he's doing and how it's basically like affecting the world. He's coming to Miami now, so everyone down there is probably celebrating.
Guess where I am.
Yeah, and everyone in Akron is pretty much burning the city down.
I know, and the jerseys.
And the jerseys, and tearing apart all of his like endorsement ads, and
right.
I saw if you go on, I was watching SportsCenter, and you know, you just see people just like crying and ripping apart posters.
You know, there's something wrong with the society when it gets to that level. Like when you get to a point where sports becomes, and not even sports that you personally play, but sports that you pay to watch. In my opinion, there's something wrong with the internal this kind of immensely tightly knit fabric that we call our society. You know, there's something wrong there when people start crying and having hysteria problems.
Alex, have you been to Ohio?
No.
Okay.
I've driven through there, but I haven't been there for longer than 2 hours.
Then you need to understand just how important it is, like, you know, sports are to people when, you know, because, like, you know, I live in, you know, greater Detroit. It's like, you know, there's not a whole lot of great places to be, you know, in this day in the economy. So that's what people look. Look, they're not playing right now, so.
No, not right now, but.
It's these sort of things. It's like sports. That's what makes sports towns is like, you know, everyone just gets so connected because after you come home from a grueling 9-to-5 and you're just like, oh, I want to see some wings. And that's, you know, that's your happiness. And that sports are always around friends.
I mean, anyways. I understand, right. Yeah, I understand.
Straight enough.
That's what we do here.
Yes. Going off on huge tangent. Anyway, another thing about the 2014 thing, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if we see maybe a Theta-based Buick and maybe that. And okay, this is just my forecast. I have absolutely nothing to base this on whatsoever. But.
Or so he says.
No, I really don't. But, you know, it like if GM. A lot of people internally are very excited about the next generation of products, 2014, 2015 model years. And it leads me to believe that, you know, okay, maybe because they're putting everything together for the new GM and there's no more going to be no more product gaps where Saturn and Saab and Pontiac all kind of like, you know, took the place in. And they're really going to build a brand structure that's, you know, really going to work and it's really modern. And that's what I'm really excited about. You know, I have, you know, no clue really what the end result is, but I want to see, and what we're hoping for is, you know, a Buick being a full-on, you know, upper-tier market Lexus fighter.
Right.
And, you know, like they've been doing with that LaCrosse and the Regal, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. not so much the Regal. That's more of like a German thing.
Right, but the SRX should have been, in my opinion, a Buick.
Yeah, it should have been a Buick. And who knows? We might see the SRX...
And you know,
not tit for tat, but right. come over as, you know, a more
absolutely
a smoother, more elegant Buick. And we got that new Alpha platform coming out that's going to underpin, you know, three different models. It might underpin a fourth. It might get a CUV
SRX replacement. I agree.
Yes.
You know, now that we're on the topic of the SRX, I want to quickly mention this. Have you ever noticed that the SRX is, for all intents and purposes, it's a midsize CUV, right?
Yeah, it's longer, I mean, but only in the nose.
Right, but it's 190 inches. I mean, it goes proportionally. It's almost as if you lay over the SRX over the Lexus RX, which was Cadillac's main target in developing the SRX, the new SRX.
Yes.
If you lay them over, What you'll actually see is that both of these cars are proportionally identical. I mean, the cut lines are almost the same. Even though, you know, they're completely different manufacturers. But what's interesting to me is that the SRX is built on the Theta platform, even though they call it Theta Premium. We'll call it Theta. And that's a midsize car, right? Whereas the Theta for a Chevrolet is an Equinox, right? And that's considered to be, from an internal standpoint, from within GM, that's a compact.
Well, it's because you get a whopping 2 more inches on that SRX.
So big. Wow. It's all in the bumper.
Yeah, it really, really is.
You know, actually, the wheelbase on the SRX is shorter than it is on the Equinox.
I didn't know that.
It is. I just want to... You keep talking, but I just want to double-check this. Actually, here, I have a question for you. What would you... Just give me a rundown of your dream Chevrolet CUV lineup for the, you know, going forward from the 2014 on.
Two Lambda base, or two Theta base, one Lambda base.
Okay. And then, of course, the, you know, the big stuff, the Tahoe and the...
Yeah, and then... Suburban. Just a Suburban. I don't know about the Tahoe, but, you know, if it continues to sell, I'll keep it. Sure. And then the Avalanche, too. I don't want to see that thing go away.
I don't want to see that thing go away either. I love that car.
Yeah, it's great. I love the Avalanche.
I really love it. I agree with you. I actually agree with you 100% there, and I think that the two Theta base, I just want to kind of expand on that, is that the smaller Theta base should be compact. It should be in the 170s from length perspective, 175.
I don't know about that. Maybe 170, like 879.
Sure.
Not that small.
Right. It's 175 to 180. Anywhere around there. The rest of the stuff is in the bumpers, of course. But basically, a Kia Sport, a competitor to the all-new Kia Sportage. And I'm going to say this again, even though this is a GM show. And
well, not just that, but like Ford Escape as well. And
well, the Escape is going to change drastically for its next model year. It's going to go. It's going to do away with the whole boxy styling. It's going to be based on the C1 or the EUCD platform from Ford, it's basically going to be the Ford Kuga from Europe.
But is it going to be bigger or smaller?
I believe, let me look it up. I think the Ford...
Because I know about the speculation of the rumor coming, or the Kuga coming
cool,
over
cool
here.
Cool name, Kuga.
I guess. I don't want it to be the Kuga over here. I'd rather just be called an Escape.
The Ford Kuga, you know what's funny is I can't find the specs on here. I'll keep looking at it. But yeah, that's the rumors that at least they're going to have that kind of, you know, they're going to bring over the Kuga and they're going to do away with the boxiness and the quirkiness of the Escape, which I actually like the Escape myself. So basically a competitor to the Kia Sportage, the all-new Kia Sportage. And like I said, this is a GM show, you know, we're GM fanboys, but the new Kia Sportage, it blows my mind. I mean, it's amazing. It looks great. It drives, from the first reports that I've read, it drives really well. I haven't driven it myself yet. I will be doing that shortly. But, you know, it's really, really, really excellent. And it looks great. It's got the looks to back it up. And it's one of those things where there's no third row. It's not complicated. There's no complications. Just very simple. Two rows, CUV, done. Now, the second Theta base car that we're talking about, and tell me if there's something that you want to add or
yeah,
maybe change.
Yeah, a little longer,
this.
Third rows, yeah. Going directly after those guys.
Sure.
Yeah, completely agree with you. And then you got, like, you know, your Lambda one, and you're going to – I mean, and I don't know if this will, you know, really tie in – like, you know, everything like tit for tat with GMC. Personally, with GMC, I would like to see maybe one Theta, one Alpha.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or quote unquote. You know, we'll say that, because or something along those lines. I would love to see GMC maybe pick up a little bit where Hummer left off.
Yep.
Go after maybe.
Well, you know
Jeep
what?
Market.
GMC, exactly. That's what I'm thinking. I'm looking at the new GMC. The new Jeep Grand Cherokee.
Mm-hmm.
And it has that adjustable ride height. And, you know, the Grand Cherokee is and always has been a car-based. It's not a truck-based. It's a car-based car or a vehicle.
Yep.
So there is no kind of reason why everybody thinks that in order to do a proper off-roader, which maybe that's true, but you can accomplish a fair amount of off-roading in a car-based platform. So I think that there's a possibility, and that there's a very good chance for GMC to do this, is to make the entire GMC lineup from a CUV and an SUV perspective. Obviously, there's trucks as well, and those do what they're supposed to do, and they do it well. But from a CUV perspective, what they can do with those is turn that into a Jeep competitor. You know, make those Theta, you know, beef the Theta up, beef the Lambda up, you know, make them really, you know, give them maybe something like adjustable ride height, to give them some adjustable shocks,
mm-hmm.
and let them go head-to-head against the Grand Cherokee. Let them go head-to-head against the, which I think the Theta should do, because the GMC Terrain right now, the Theta-based GMC Terrain, is only 4 or 5 inches shorter than the new Grand Cherokee. So, you know, and then we can have the Acadia, which can be bigger, but also, you know, basically be a bigger version of that, of the Terrain. So I agree with you. I think the GMC as a brand can be taken in interesting places, in places that we haven't thought of yet. And it also can be, GMC can also be that sister brand to Chevrolet that has different styling. Kind of like if you look at the Terrain and the Equinox,
mm-hmm.
You know, I really like both vehicles from a styling perspective, but to me, the Equinox seems a little bit more feminine, a little bit more girly.
Yes.
And personally, I would buy the Terrain because of that chunky, you know, borely kind of styling.
One thing I want to point out is, like, with that granite hatch, mm-hmm. that kind of it kind of points towards maybe GMC taking the route of Pontiac. And, you know, or what Pontiac should have been, but I honestly feel like GMC would be a lot better off if they absorbed what Hummer was going to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I have absolutely, if the Granite is put into production as a GMC, I will lose faith in GMC as a brand and in GM and making those kinds of decisions, because GMC is not what that Granite is. That Granite should be a Chevy, in my opinion.
Yeah, but you got to look at it this way. Look at the acclaim it's gotten. Eyes on Design Prize
Award
winning.
Sure, just change the badge, change the front grille a little bit, and it's done.
Yeah, a lot of people, they really liked it.
Sure, you know, just build it. I would love it to be built. Just make it a Chevy. It's a mainstream product. GMC should not be a mainstream product the way the Chevy is, or a mainstream brand. By the way, I looked up the specs for the Ford Kuga.
Yeah,
175 inches long.
Okay, so it's virtually no difference.
Right. So that's it. I think we've pretty much covered all of it today.
Oh well, you're forgetting. I would like to see a Buick Theta.
Oh yes.
And just one Buick Theta and one Buick Lambda.
Yeah.
And you know.
And make them soft rotors. Make them very quiet, very refined, very Lexus like. I agree with you on that front as well. For Cadillac, you know, I think the next generation SRX or whatever the replacement's going to be needs to be rear-wheel drive, and I think they need to have an even bigger version, kind of like Mercedes has with the ML and the GL.
Mm-hmm.
Those are basically, you know, two versions of the same vehicle, but those two need to be that's what Cadillac needs to do. They need to have rear-wheel drive platforms across the board for Cadillac. And I think even Carl Strock, right, he said that we're going to be better on unsprung mass in Cadillac than BMW, right? Is that something along the lines of what he said?
Yeah, that's what Strock has said. But really, is unsprung mass really something to look for in a Cadillac? I mean, that when you say like unsprung mass, that makes me think, is like, just how many things are they going to take out, or what are they going to put in there?
Well, it's not even about that. It's about how you can engineer stuff, because, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff that I don't even want to get into. But I have an engineer friend who was showing me when he used to work for an automaker, an import automaker, and he was one of the chief engineers for let's just say it's one of the most successful cars worldwide today.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons that the car that drives the way it is today is that it actually, they engineered it in such a way that it hasn't been done before. You know, yeah, there's only so many ways you can engineer a certain car or a certain car in a certain segment for a certain price range, but there's also smart engineering. And what you can do is, you know, you can take, and instead of using the same, this the general principle, you can actually rethink certain aspects. And I'm not an engineer myself, nor do I play one on TV, so I won't even get into it, but the stuff he was telling me just blew my mind. And there's a bunch of stuff you can do to decrease weight, to decrease unsprung mass, and it's something that Cadillac can definitely do. Given GM's engineering talent, I mean, it's there. They just need to, you know, they just need to set their minds to it.
I agree with you.
So, I think we're done.
That wraps it up.
I think it does. You know, should we have a poll on what we think and let everybody vote on what they think? Obviously, there's not much debating today because I think we did pretty much agree on everything we discussed. So I think,
contrary to what you said earlier.
Yes, I thought we would be disagreeing the whole time through, but it turns out that the times when you think you're going to be disagreeing with people is actually the time when you actually are in the most agreeable mood.
You threw reverse psychology.
Reverse, exactly. It worked, right?
I suppose so.
Yes. I was reading his book. No, I'm kidding. So, well, should we put up a post or a poll?
As always.
Okay, so we'll put up a poll asking whether they agree with our plans. Is that okay? If they agree with our plans for Chevrolet and Buick and Cadillac crossovers going forward.
Yes.
Okay, we'll put that up, and we'll let you be the voice of the show, so you can vote at debate.gmauthority.com. You be the judge. You tell us what you think. We think whether you agree with us, whether you think we're full of it, or whether you're somewhere in between. Debate.gmauthority.com is where you can vote, and this is of course episode 13. So just click on the episode 13 link, and you'll be presented with a poll, and you can select your answer. And even if the answer that you don't see, that you don't agree, you can and you don't see the answer that you agree with, you can type one in yourself manually and hit the submit button, and then that will be also visible to everyone who is taking the poll. And after you voted, let us know what you think of the show. You can send your opinions, you can send your arguments, you can even send topics that you like to see us debate to podcast@gmauthority.com, or you can even tweet us if you use Twitter. We are GM Authority. That's all one word, GM Authority. And of course, an iTunes review would be very, 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 very helpful. If you can leave us one of those, we'd be very, very, very much obliged. And I think that's pretty much it. If you haven't yet tweeted out about the show to all your friends, or if you haven't told people on Facebook that you're listening to the show, please do. It's really important to us that people find out about this podcast, and we love doing it, but you kind of have to help us out and make it worth our while. There aren't any advertisers on this show, as you noticed. We are trying to keep it advertising free for as long as possible to get you the best experience possible and not have to interrupt the show with any kind of advertisements or clips. So if you can help us out and just take 30 seconds, 40 seconds to leave us a review and to tell your friends about the show, we'd really, really, really appreciate it. And with that, another debate is in the can. Please rate this show in the iTunes store. Head on over to iTunes and search for GM Authority Debate.